Okay, let's move along to a longer poem. You all right for another 20 minutes? Is that, no. But you see what you got, what you get there. So you get, first of all, we had Emily Dickinson. I don't know what that is about death, some sort of mystical, I don't know what it is. Then you've got Frost, genuine skepticism, tilted towards nihilism, but not affirming that, just saying, as I suppose. Then you've got Wilbur's, I don't know what's going to happen, to what undreamt condition, which even though it isn't positive, sounds positive, undreamt condition, inch by inch I go. Now we come to another vision of death again. So this is Larkin's very famous late poem, Orbade, never collected in a collection. There are three great collections there's four collections by Larkin. Larkin's hardly ever written a bad poem. The first collection is a bit the North Ship. He disavowed it. It's actually got masterpieces in it, but it's not masterpieces throughout. The next three collections are pretty near masterpieces throughout. I think he's probably the greatest. I think him and Elizabeth Bishop are probably the two greatest late 20th century poets. And actually got all sorts of similarities in some ways. A small amount of work, nearly every single one of it is wonderful. But this is a very late poem. It was published in the TLS, never got into a collection. He was hoping that this would be part of a collection. He said, I'm trying to get a collection together, but he never felt it was good enough, and so it never got published in a book. Written not long after his mother's death, there's a short four-line poem dedicated to her that comes just after it in the collected work. He wrote to his mother every day of her life. People have a very bad idea of Larkin, but just the fact that he wrote to his mother every day, I says a lot. His mother was going blind as she got old. She was in an old people's home. She died. He then started to get symptoms for cancer, which killed him. He died, I think he was 63 or 65, which is exactly when his father died. He had this horror of death and thought that he would never outlive his father, and he didn't. He died exactly the same year his father did. That they F you up, your mum and dad, they do not mean to, but they do. That famous poem, This Be the Verse. He says in a letter, I hope people don't think that's my parents, and my parents were wonderful to me. That's the thing with Larkin, you can read him really wrongly. So this poem was published in 1977. He said it had been around since 1974. So he'd written the first three stanzas of it in 1974, and he said he couldn't find the end. It's a Keatsian ode. I'll say something about that in a minute. In a letter he wrote at around the time, to me, since death is the most important thing about life, because it puts an end to life and extinguishes further hope of restitution or recompense, as well as any more experience. So the expression of death and the effects of death are the highest planes of literature and should not be lightly loosed upon the populace. Somebody said, in another letter he says, I can't imagine how people can say, no use worrying about it, it's inevitable. That's exactly why I worry. another letter he says, I think death is the hardest thing in the world to come to terms with. So let's hear the poem and I'll say a bit more about it.
O Bard. I work all day and get half drunk at night. Waking at four to soundless dark, I stare. In time, the curtain edges will grow light. Till then, I see what's really always there. Unresting death, a whole day nearer now, making all thought impossible. But how and where and when I shall myself die. Arid interrogation. Yet the dread of dying and being dead flashes afresh to hold and horrify. The mind blanks at the glare, not in remorse, the good not done, the love not given, time torn off unused, nor wretchedly, because an only life can take so long to climb, clear of its wrong beginnings, and may never, but at the total emptiness forever, the sure extinction that we travel to and shall be lost in always, not to be here, not to be anywhere, and soon, nothing more terrible, nothing more true. This is a special way of being afraid, no trick dispels. Religion used to try, that vast moth-eaten musical brocade, created to pretend we never die, and specious stuff that says no rational being can fear a thing it will not feel, not seeing that this is what we fear. No sight, no sound, no touch or taste or smell, nothing to think with, nothing to love or link with, the anesthetic from which none come round. And so it stays, just on the edge of vision, a small unfocused blur, a standing chill that slows each impulse down to indecision. Most things may never happen, this one will, and realization of it rages out in furnace fear when we are caught without people or drink. Courage is no good, it means not scaring others. Being brave lets no one off the grave. Death is no different, whined at than withstood. Slowly light strengthens, and the room takes shape. It stands plain as a wardrobe. What we know, have always known, know that we can't escape, yet can't accept. One side will have to go. Meanwhile, telephones crouch, getting ready to ring in locked up offices, and all the uncaring, intricate, rented world begins to rouse. The sky is white as clay with no sun. Work has to be done. Postmen, like doctors, go from house to house.
Fabulous. So again, not long, his mother died not long before this poem, and in one letter he says, "Poetry, that rare bird, has flown out of the window and now sings on some alien shore. In other words, I just drink these days. I wake at 4 and lie worrying till 7. Loneliness, death, lawsuits, talent gone, lawsuits, loneliness, talent gone, death. I'm really not happy these days." That was, you know, so there's no making it up in this. I mean, this is an absolute master of a poem. It's basically a Keatsian ode. It's written in pure ode form with exactly the right rhyming scheme. Very, very difficult to do. With, you know, I won't go through all the metrics of it, but mostly in pentameter with a line of trimeter and the penultimate line. Very common thing to do in an ode form is 10-line verses. And the ode form is a serious form. It's it's trying to say a big thing, you know, like Ode to a Nightingale, you know. It's actually like a pure Keats poem, but with this incredibly contemporary voice, with none of that poetics, you know. I work all day and get half drunk at night. Just to say about that, I was really, again, was really struck by that first line. If you wrote it in a poetry workshop, you'd say that's not very poetic. I work half day and get half drunk at night. What strikes me about it, and sorry to use a rude word, but knowing Larkin, you'd expect him to say half pissed, wouldn't you? I've actually had to correctly go back to this poem and think, is that right? I work all day and get half drunk at night. Normally, he would you know, Larkin famously uses swear words, which of course Keats would never do. He uses his swear words extremely carefully, some of them very ripe ones, but he chooses them just as carefully as he chooses any word. He's incredibly careful with his word choices and often never repeats a word again in a poem, in any of his poems. You know, actually, he brings some words back here from a poem called Trees, you know, the one that finishes, begin afresh, 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 for those of you who know it. He actually uses the word afresh in this poem in a new chilling flashes of fresh to hold and holify, which once was a promise of new beginnings, which for him is very bleak. But I work all day and get half drunk at night. Do you see how flat that is? It's like, I can't even be bothered to swear about it. I can't even give it a bit of flourish and put the P word in. I'm just going to say, that's actually just what it's like. I work all day, I get half drunk at night. That's actually all I'm doing. And it, you know, he did, you know, in letters he says, I'm becoming more and more of an alcoholic. I mean, he really by now was an alcoholic. He says, I am getting more of an alcoholic. I sit half stewed each night. Terribly tragic. I work all day and get half drunk at night. It's like, this is a late poem, one of the last poems, the last great poem he ever wrote. It's like, that's my life, tell you what. And you know that letter Talent got, he had this horror that his talent, he's an incredibly gifted poet. You see poems he wrote when he was 18, they're absolutely incredibly good, that he never published. A lot of stuff that he didn't publish, anybody else would think was their masterpiece, you know. He's like incredibly gifted. All of his life he agonised about whether to get married or not. He had three, women seemed to really go for him. He had three women on the go. And he just wouldn't get married because his fear was if he got married, the poems would stop coming. His whole life was spent waiting for poems to arrive. Like he started this 3-year, and Andrew Motion knew him, and Andrew Motion met him once and he said that he was again half drunk. He said, yeah, but I have finished this poem that I've been trying to write since 1974. Finally finished it, I think, and sent it off to the TLS. And he said in another letter, oh, have a look at the TLS. You know, it was published just before Christmas, a bit of Christmas cheer, you know. So very, you know, I work all day and get half drunk at night. Very flat statement. Waking at 4 to soundless dark, I stare. In time, the curtain edges will glow light. Till then, I see what's really always there. See the beautiful rhyme? But it's so well written that the rhyme's just like he just naturally rhymes in perfect ode form. I mean, he's like the great technician because you hardly know. Every line feels like exactly that's what you should say. And golly, it rhymes perfectly in every, you know, every line rhymes. But did you see also that's a blues reference? He was very keen on jazz and the blues. I work all day and get half drunk at night. Very typical, I wake up for, you know, a lot of blues songs are about, you know, I woke up one morning, you know, that's a very typical blues trope, isn't it? I woke up one morning, felt blue, da da da. He's actually using that blues thing. I work all day and get half drunk at night, waking at 4 to soundless dark. I stare, in turn, the curtain edges will grow light. Till then I see what's really always there. Unresting death. Unresting. That's again from the tree, from trees. Unresting, threshing. You know, he uses it positively in another poem. Unresting death. A whole day nearer now, making all thought impossible, but how and where and when I shall myself die. Arid interrogation, yet the dread of dying and being dead flashes afresh to hold and horrify. The mind blanks at the glare, not in remorse, the good not done, the love not given, time torn off and used. Isn't that a wonderful list of things that you would feel remorseful for? His lists are incredible. The good not done, that is something you should feel remorseful for. The love not given, absolutely. Time torn off and used, brilliant. You know, that's one of those lists where you think that's about all you could ever feel remorseful for, isn't it? Fantastic list. The good not done, the love not given, time torn off and used. But he says, not in remorse. The good not done, the love not given, time torn off and used, nor wretchedly because the only life nor wretchedly because an only life can take so long to climb clear of its wrong beginnings and may never. Isn't that a wonderful sentiment? Nor wretchedly because an only life can take so long to climb clear of its wrong beginnings and may never. That's such a compassionate thought, isn't it? That he knows that that's true, that you can have people have such difficult lives, you know, he was thinking of, you know, childhood trauma and so on, that you take so long to escape that and may never. You know, for someone who everyone, you know, castigates as being right-wing, which is, he was only doing, you know, he just played with that. That's a very compassionate thought to put in a poem. But at the total emptiness forever, the sure extinction that we travel to and shall be lost in always, not to be here, not to be anywhere, and soon, nothing more terrible, nothing more true. And soon, and it was soon for him. Yeah. This is a special way of being afraid. That's a chilling line, one line. This is a special way of being afraid. It was very odd to use that word, special. In other words, this is a very particular species of fear. No trick dispels. Religion used to try that vast, moth-eaten, musical brocade created to pretend we never die. That's fabulous, isn't it? That vast, moth-eaten, musical brocade. You're thinking of, what's that program you have on Sunday? Songs of Praise, you know, that vast, moth-eaten, musical brocade. He did Desert Island Discs, and he chose lots of hymns. He really liked hymns. He said he really liked hymns, he really likes jazz. He thought there might be some relationship between the two. But a wonderful way to put that vast, moth-eaten, musical brocade created to pretend we never die. And it's something you draw across the facts of life, that religion is something that pretends. And precious stuff that says no rational being can fear a thing it will not feel. Not seeing that this is what we fear, no sight, no sound, no touch or taste or smell, nothing to think with, nothing to love or link with, the anesthetic from which none come round. And so it says, just on the edge of vision, a small, unfocused blur, a standing chill that slows each impulse down to imprecision. Most things may never happen, this one will. And realization of it rages out in furnace fear when we are caught without people or drink. Courage is no good. It means not scaring others. Being brave lets no one off the grave. Death is no different, whined at, than withstood. Banti thought that that was the best line that Larkin had ever written. Death is no different, whined at, than withstood. He heard that in a talk somebody gave, that they quoted just that line. Death is no different, whined at, than withstood. Whined, you know, means moaned at, than withstood. And that's what then made him read all of Larkin and read the Andrew Motion's biography. Satchadarka went to see him. Larkin loved to swear, and his letters are full of extremely ripe swear words. And Satchadarka said to him, "What did you make of all the swearing, though, Banti?" And Andrew Motion's biography is full of swearing. And Banti said, "Well, I was in the army." We haven't got time to go into every element of this too much, but then you get this last stanza. Slowly light strengthens, the room takes shape. It stands plain as a wardrobe. What we know, have always known that we can't escape, yet can't accept. That's a wonderful piece of writing. You see how shape, escape, rhymes. So the light, slowly light strengthens and the room takes shape, line break. It stands plain as a wardrobe. What we know, have always known that we can't escape, yet can't accept. You know, that you see how he's using rhyme, that we know we can't escape, yet can't accept. One side will have to go. In other words, the world or me, one side will have to go. I think that plain as a wardrobe is absolutely incredible. Plain as a wardrobe. Isn't it brilliant that slowly light strengthens and the room takes shape? So it's happening in real time. It stands plain as a wardrobe. Isn't that incredible metaphor? What we know, have always known, known we can't escape, yet can't accept. It couldn't get better than a wardrobe. Those old fact, we now have built-in wardrobes, don't we? But wardrobes are always a very clumsy bit of furniture. They're very big. There's never anywhere to put them in a room. If you move into a place and you've got a wardrobe, there's never anywhere it works in. That's why people have them built in now. They always stick out. They're always a problematic bit of furniture, a wardrobe. So to say that death is like that, that it's big, it sticks out, there's no place for it. It's a brilliant metaphor, a fantastic homely metaphor. Wonderful poem. So let's just do the last poem now, I think, because we haven't got quite time to read it again. But, you know, it's terribly nihilistic, but intensely truthful. No doubt about his own belief in all that. Orbeid, by the way, means a morning song, a song or poem that you write in the morning. Usually, often a love song or about parting lovers or a celebration of day even. So it's a whole, and that's to do with the ode form, it's a song about what morning is shown to him, plain as a wardrobe.